Whenever you're ready, Mr. President.
Okay. We are back in session at 10:15, and I believe we were discussing a motion and a second as far as a non-disciplinary letter of concern and a the requirement of 5 hours of CE in coding and billing. Is that correct?
Yes.
Margaret?
Yes. Mr. President,
maybe.
Members of the board, I believe that Dr. Hunter seconded the motion. I don't recall.
Dr. Jones.
Dr. Jones.
Margaret, did you hear that?
No.
Dr. Pisagas, this is Mona Baskin. I don't hear Margaret on the line, but I will go ahead and mute myself. I hear you.
Okay.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I hear you also.
Can you hear? This is Margaret Whalen. Can you hear me?
Now I can.
Okay, my apologies. Mr. President, members of the board, Dr. Moffitt had made the motion, and I believe Dr. Jones had seconded the motion for the letter of concern and for the non-disciplinary order for CE, and that's kind of where we left it, the board.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. That's what I asked before you left audio. In the synopsis, I said, is that where we're at? So you just basically said yes. So we have a motion and a second. It's okay. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we will vote on that motion with a roll call vote. Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Let the record show that the motion passed. We will be Margaret will be letting Dr. Packer know what he does from here, and you also sending a letter to the patient, letting her know what came of this and further discussing that if she wishes. Thank you very much for your time today. We're going to move on to item D2, Todd Geiler, OD, IR number 202020. Dr. Mastoris, would you like to summarize this, please?
Yes. Okay, so this is patient JN and against Dr. Todd Geiler. Her complaint is improper correction of contact lenses, billing issues, and ethics. The patient was seen on January 29, 2020. She discussed with the doctor trying multifocal contact lenses as she'd been in monovision prior to that. At the visit, she was... they ordered her trials, and she was to pick them up and come in for a follow-up. The patient had two follow-up visits. Or no. Let me see. Yeah. At the first follow-up, she was given new trials, and then at the second one, the doctor and patient decided to go back to monovision. At that point, she ordered boxes. She picked them up and paid for them. She called the office to request a stronger prescription for reading in her one eye, which the staff told her she needed another appointment. At that point, she received a statement from the practice for her visit. She had three charges for the initial visit and the two follow-ups. The patient called around to other offices to see what their normal practices were and found that other doctors do not charge for follow-up visits between 30 to 90 days. The patient also reported a red flag in her mind that she had previously been seen at another office and that Dr. Geiler had been appointed to a corporate commission, Game and Fish Commission, and he made a comment about being under investigation, which she found alarming. The patient then submitted a payment for her first visit and a letter to the doctor, which we also received. And that is it.
Thank you. I just realized this is IR 20-20-20. Boy. So is the patient JN on the phone call?
Yes, good morning. This is JN. I don't have a lot more comments. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to say go ahead and
I really don't have a okay, thank you. I really don't have a lot more to say other than the details that were listed in the complaint. Just one comment then. When I did, you know, tell him congratulations on appointment, he says, well, I asked them if I was under investigation, and they assured me I wasn't. Then I asked them again and said, are you sure? And they said, yeah, we're sure. Well, I didn't realize. I thought maybe he was kidding, but I don't really know. But based on that comment later on, I started questioning it. And then when I got the bill for follow-ups, I checked around with other people. And in all my years of wearing contacts or glasses, have never been charged or the insurance charged for follow-up appointments until we get it right. And that's basically the complaint is being charged, or my insurance company charged, and ultimately me. And then if there's other people in the, that are clients that are also getting charged for follow-ups, and if that's not the general or standard practices, and that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And one more comment. I'm glad to answer any questions that you, the board, might have.
Thank you. So we'll do that if we need to. Is Dr. Geiler on the phone? Okay. And nor is counsel? All right. Then we can just start discussing this. I thought maybe he'd gotten on later.
Dr. Christakis, members of the board. Dr. Christakis, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin. Ms. Whalen, Dr. Geiler has not had an attorney file a notice of appearance. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Then we can move forward. I wanted to be clear on that. All right. Thank you.
No problem. Any discussion? I actually have more questions for the doctor than I do the patient. So I guess I'll go on in this discussion, hopefully clarify some things. You are correct in that most offices, at least mine, we charge a fee for a contact lens exam, and that includes follow-ups. And as I look at his fees, I mean, that doesn't mean you have to do that. Any office can charge any way they want as long as it's not fraudulent and you know up front. Meaning if you don't charge for a contact lens exam in the beginning, I would charge for follow-ups. Whereas if I charge a global fee, then that includes follow-ups. I just don't know. The questions I would have for the doctor are, is that first exam something you charge everyone for a first exam? Meaning even if they don't get contacts. And then you charge for the contact lens visits as you see fit. That way someone's not overpaying and someone's not underpaying. Because we all have patients that we might see once for follow-up, and other patients we might see 20 times for follow-up. Okay, that's exaggerating, but you get my point. I just don't know how he bills. It looks like that first billing is for an exam. Now, but it might just be that it's higher than normal because it was part of the contact lens exam, because he did take the time to put lenses on her. So you would expect it to be, but I don't know. So not knowing the answers to some of these questions, I can't really make a judgment as to whether this was something that was unprofessional. Anyone else have a comment?
This is Dr. Jones.
Dr. Moffitt. Go ahead,
Pardon?
Dr. Jones.
Okay. I had a question for the patient. When she had her first visit, I was curious, did he just hand her the contact lenses, or did she actually try them on? And because I couldn't understand that based off of the records. So I didn't know if she actually tried them on and he saw how they fit on that first day, or if he just handed her some and she went home with them.
This is JN. I went in for an exam for contacts and or update on my glasses prescription. and we talked about the multifocal lenses, and he said, well, we could give it a try. However, he didn't have the power or the prescription in his office, so he had to order a sample or a set to try out. And then that's when I waited for those to come in, and then I tried those out, and it didn't work. It just didn't work at all. I had a difficult time seeing far away and close up, and they made me a little dizzy. So I called the office. We set up another appointment so that he said, tweak it a little bit and we'll get you going. We'll get you fixed here. And so he gave another prescription. Those came in much sooner, like a few days after that second appointment. I picked them up, tried them again. They weren't much different than the first ones, and I was getting a little frustrated, like, this is not going to work. So I called back in. They said, you have to come back in to get another, take a look and see. And I said, it's obvious at this point that I'm probably not a good candidate. I really wanted to go that direction. And he said, well, probably not, but we'll get you fixed up. And I said, I might as well go back to monovision because I've done that for years and years. So he said, well, we'll get you set up that. Each time he did look at my eyes, and I thought, well, it's because he's not sure how the prescription would work for the mono, for the multifocal. And then he wanted to make sure when I did the monovision, if the prescription, what it would be. And so then when the lenses came in for that, he gave me a sample that day after the third visit, but he didn't have one eye wasn't quite powerful enough. He said, if we order them, you'll get the right power. So then I picked them up, paid for them a 6 months worth. And then within a few days, I thought these aren't working because the mono vision was so that I could see close up and far away. And I still couldn't see close up without putting reading glasses on. So I felt like it wasn't what I needed better diagnosis or better prescription. So I called back in and told them, and they said, well, you'll have to come in again. And I thought, the fourth visit, if we haven't gotten it right, I'm not going to come back in if we can't get this, proper. I'll wait. I'll go to another doctor. So basically that's where it stands. And that's it.
Thank you. I was just curious because I couldn't tell if they actually looked at the contacts on your eyes and if, they measured the vision and make sure you were seeing well. So thank you.
I'll follow up. The first two visits, we did not look with them in the eyes. And then the third one with the ones he had in the office, I don't recall sitting back down and having him look at them. He may have. I've kind of forgotten that point. Because I know I never read anything to see if I could read what I've done in the past at other doctor's office. They give you something to read up close up, and I didn't do that. So I don't believe he looked at them in my eyes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? The comments that I would have would be and I don't know if we need to do an informal hearing or interview to get the doctor's side of these charges or not, whether it's something we need or whether we can make a decision based on this. If he charged the normal exam fee and then charged the follow-up fees on a per-visit basis, that, I guess, is okay. I mean, that is okay. It's not how I do it, but that's something that, if that's the way the doctor does it, he can. But there is a communication problem here as far as, again, going back to informing a patient of fees before treatment. Now, this isn't the treatment, but contact lens fitting is, in and of itself, a method of treatment. And the patient had no idea she was getting charged every time they called her back. And so I have a problem with that, whether it's a disciplinary action or not, I don't know based on the answers I have now. So I guess what we have to discuss and what, hopefully someone else helps with is, do we need to hear from the doctor or do we have enough information to, come up with some type of a decision?
This is Dr. Mastars. for the two follow-up visits, it looks like he charged at 99213, and we don't have any records of that. So I think we would need to see those records.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I agree.
Okay. So basically, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Baskin, that we just think that we need to hear from the doctor and get the other records besides just the exam record to see what the process is in that office. As far as
Dr. Prasaga,
go ahead. Yes.
That's correct. So you would, at this point, you would continue the investigation. Ms. Whalen can go ahead and request the additional records for the two follow-up exams. She can also probably maybe request all the records, including the records that for, you know, any kind of disclosure, any kind of financial disclosures, all of the, you know, complete records. Then at that point, we'd have to have all those records brought back to the board. Ms. Whalen can also invite the doctor to come back and speak to the board at the time once all the records are obtained and you have a complete medical file so you can look at not only the initial
so
visit, but the follow-up.
So we don't have to go to an informal to get that. We can just ask for that and continue the complaint.
Continue the investigation and request
the records. Yeah, continue the investigation. Okay.
Yes,
without
doctor.
Going
Thank
to informal interview.
That's correct, because you don't have all the information together to go to the informal. Okay, thank you.
Then can I make a motion? I think I will. I'd like to make a motion to direct staff to contact the doctor and get all the patient records, including intake forms, and any follow-up visits, so that we can further review the case and the complaint. Now, do I have to give a reason for that? Or since we're not doing anything, I don't have to say because of our 421-303B.
No. Dr. Kasagas, this is Mona Baskin. Your discussion is you've made a very good record during the board meeting regarding what your concerns are. So you're just continuing the investigation, and you've outlined the information that you need. So I think the motion is complete. I mean, the motion, or I don't know if you made a motion. I think you just directed Ms. Whalen, so
no.
You may want to put that motion form.
That was a motion. That was a motion, I said.
Okay.
Can I make a motion? Of course I can. So
can
is there a second to that motion? Go ahead.
Excuse me, Kim. This is
a comment. No, ma'am. Not at this point in time. Okay. Thank you. Is there a
Dr. Moffitt, I'll second the motion.
Thank you very much. We have a motion and a second. Now we can have discussion. Now, since we're discussing the motion, can I accept comments from the patient, Mona, or Ms. Baskin, or is that not proper?
You are continuing the investigation, so it's generally not proper, but I'll leave that to you,
well,
Dr. Kasagas. At this point, you're not making...
I don't think we need to because we're continuing the investigation, so anything you have to say can be said at the next meeting when we get together to do that. So I just didn't think it was something we needed to continue with this motion. I was just making sure I wasn't doing anything against the rules. So any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we will vote. Dr. Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt.
Aye.
Dr. Hunter.
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris.
Aye.
I vote aye. It's unanimous, so staff can get that for us, and we can continue that to another time.
Yes.
Thank you very much, patient JN. You will be hearing from us. Okay, moving on to item E. Executive Director approval of new license applications pursuant to ARS 32-3123. So all of these have been approved in the time period of May to June 11th?
Yes, sir.
And they're all legit?
Yes, they have all met the requirements of the law and successfully completed the applications.
Okay.
So they were approved.
So do we need a... need a motion to do that, or now it's done? I thought. I was just making sure.
Just for the record.
Yeah, exactly. F, Review discussion and possible action on request for extension of application time frame due to COVID-19 circumstances pursuant to executive orders 2020-17.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. We have two applicants who, even with the regular extension request, which allows for 25% of the overall time frame, will still be outside of that time frame due to restrictions set forth for requirements that they need to meet, restrictions set forth by COVID-19, for requirements. So both of these applicants will be endorsement candidates, but they needed the SELMO certificate through ARBO. And one of the requirements of the SELMO certificate is that the courses are COPE approved. And so some of the courses, even though COPE has modified its rule, a lot of the courses that were intended for March, April, May, and June have been either canceled or postponed to August and September. So it doesn't make sense administratively, financially, to burden the applicant by withdrawing the application pursuant to timeframes, having them reapply at a later date when they take the coursework, only to resubmit the exact same paperwork at another fee. I also don't think it would be in line with the governor's initiative for all his regulatory, restrictions or removing the restrictions of regulatory burden that he has in place. So the executive order 2020-17 allows a little bit of leeway for boards to waive any issues that might be impeding an applicant's right to get licensed or, the path in which they do that. So, I mean, that includes fees and, for some boards it includes, like, testing and things like that. So I think if it pleases the board, I would ask that you grant an extension for both of these applicants to December 31st of 2020. Both have sent emails to me stating that they do have plans for August and September to take the coursework required for SELMO to get licensed in Arizona. So, again, I would ask the board to consider extending the time frame under Executive Order 2020-17 for these two.
Is that a motion? I mean, does that require a motion and a vote?
It does require a motion and a vote, so whoever makes the motion, if they would just include if they would accept an extension under the order and to what date.
Can someone make that motion? Okay, I'll make the motion to extend the date to the extension to December 31st, 2020. And the availability to extend it if for some reason things still aren't open then, which I certainly hope isn't the case. And with using the paperwork and everything and the fees that they have already submitted.
Thank you.
Is there a second to that motion?
I second Dr. Moffitt.
Is there any discussion to the motion? Okay. We'll vote on it. Dr. Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
And I also vote aye. So, thank you. We will continue on with them, and hopefully they can do that sometime in the fall. G, election of officers pursuant to the provisions of ARS 32-1703A. Position of president. I am now accepting nominations for president of the Arizona State Board of Optometry for the coming year.
This is Dr. Jones. I nominate Dr. Kelly Moffitt.
Dr. Moffitt, do you accept that nomination?
I accept, unless there are any other nominations.
I'm getting there. I was going to ask if there are any other nominations for president. Okay. Hearing none, I think we should vote for Dr. Moffitt as president. So,
Dr. Christakis, this is Dr. Christakis. This is Mona Baskin. Can we have that in a motion form because it's an official board decision?
Okay.
So if we can have that nomination in a motion in a second and then a vote. Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to make a motion. Well, no, go ahead. You made the nomination. So go ahead, Dr. Jones.
This is Dr. Jones. I make the motion to, I don't know, nominate Dr. Kelly Moffitt for president of the board.
I'll second that motion. And since it's a motion, is there any discussion? Come on, do you really? I'm just kidding. All right, Dr. Jones.
Hi.
Can Dr. Moffitt? Yeah, sure you can. Dr. Moffitt.
Hi.
Dr. Hunter.
Hi.
Dr. Mastoris.
Aye.
I also vote aye. So by unanimous decision and acclamation, Dr. Moffitt will be the president next year. Now, position of vice president. Are there any nominations for vice president?
Dr. Mastoris, I nominate the current vice president to continue her. Dr. Darcy Jones.
Her reign? Are there any other nominations for vice president? Okay. So was that in a form of a motion, Dr. Mastoris, since we don't have any other nominations?
I motion to elect Dr. Darcy Jones' position of vice president for the state board.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Dr. Moffitt, I second.
Thank you. Any discussion? We'll vote on this. Dr. Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt.
Aye.
Dr. Hunter.
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris.
Aye.
I also vote aye, so it's unanimous that we have a vice president. So we have our new slate of officers in play. Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Item H. Item H, Executive Director's Report.
Da-da-da-da. Thank you, Mr. President. Our budget update. As a reminder, the appropriation for the Board of Optometry for fiscal year 20 is $240,700. As of May 31st, 2020, 91.67% of the fiscal year has elapsed, with the board spending at 90.64%. We had a beginning cash balance of $360,451.71 and an ending cash balance of $358,274.02. So our budget remains healthy, and we will, July 1st, be getting our new fiscal year. So this will all start over again. 2020 executive orders. Excuse me. 2020 executive orders addressing COVID-19 issues. 2020-17, I had that on there just as a reminder. That was the one that we utilized for the licensing. That one is still in effect. So if we do experience any licensing issues in the future until the order is rescinded, we can address them through that order. Executive Order 2020-36 was instituted on May 12th of 2020. It's entitled Stay Healthy, Return Smarter, Return Stronger. Basically, the governor stated that Arizona shall institute a Stay Healthy, Return Smarter, Return Stronger policy that promotes physical distancing, encouraging social connectedness, allowing businesses to gradually and safely open in compliance with the federal guidelines as the state continues to mitigate and prevent the spread of COVID-19. It builds on actions the state has already taken in previous orders and further memorializes some already in effect to slow the spread and protect the citizens of Arizona. That order also expires Executive Orders 2020-18, 2020-24, and 2020-33. So this supersedes those three orders in particular. So those three orders are no longer in effect at this time. Executive Order 2020-37 was enacted on May 21st of 2020. That is enhanced surveillance advisory, continuing to monitor responsiveness to COVID-19. I think the governor felt that the COVID-19 pandemic justifies the issuance of enhanced surveillance pursuant to statute, and it supersedes any reporting requirements set forth in Executive Orders 2020-13, 2020-22 number 4, 2020-23, and 2020-30 number 10. But all other provisions of those particular orders are renewed and remain in effect. I apologize if it sounds confusing. It probably is to the public as well. It's just important to note that the governor is trying to stay on top of it. So when orders come out, sometimes they get revised through other executive orders that come up behind it. And based on that, the governor may repeal or revise or amend some portion of the order, but leave some of it intact. Part of the surveillance advisory means that the Department of Health Services can access confidential patient information, including medical records, wherever and by whomever held, whether or not the patient identity is known, including health information held by Health Current in its capacity as a statewide health information exchange. The governor has determined that after considering the least restrictive measures necessary that are consistent with public health and safety, he is directing the following under the surveillance advisory. And this is a very short summary of what I thought were kind of the most, I guess, pertinent or important ones. The list was very long. It had to do with labs and blood testing and all kinds of other things. The governor is basically directing reports from those persons and entities required to report, which is all healthcare practitioners licensed under Title 32. The clinical syndromes and any illness or health condition that may be associated with a specific illness or healthcare condition to be reported, patient tracking, information sharing, specimen testing coordination. So, again, this is an emergency law, actually, that gets enacted during times of pandemic, where the state has a little bit more authority than they normally would to collect personal health information or data. So, if you get a request for some reason from the governor's office or from the Department of Health Services, it would fall under this executive order. Let's see. COPE has extended its modified rules for continuing education. I think I sent out an email when COPE first modified its rules back in March to allow for any courses that were previously in person that have now been recorded and presented online are still considered, quote, in person attended. They did that for a lot of state boards who do not have online or correspondence courses as we do ours. You know, we accept up to 12 hours of self-instructed media. So to kind of quash that a little bit for some of the boards that don't have that, they extended that offer. It was extended once again, and it's extended to June 30th at this time. So the board will just continue to monitor, and it's not something that you would ever see as board members probably, but as practitioners, you definitely would if you wanted to utilize a course that was COPE approved that's now available online. So it's just something Ms. Hollins and I are keeping track of, but it's currently extended to June 30th, and COPE has stated that they would continue to monitor and modify as needed. So I kind of expect that they'll do it to the end of the year, especially I hope they do because I think the cases in Arizona are spiking, the COVID-19 cases of people getting sick. So we all need to be careful. The ARBO annual meeting, which was scheduled for June 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, has officially been canceled. However, ARBO did come back and offer a telephonic meeting instead. They will be meeting on Saturday, June 20th, telephonically, and also Monday, June 22nd. So I will be attending, most definitely. Oh, they waived the registration fee. Normally, it does cost us to go to ARBO. But I am extending an offer to every board member to see if any of you are interested in attending at least a portion of the meeting telephonically. It's definitely a minimalized agenda. It's not the usual meeting agenda due to time constraints and being telephonic. I can send out the documentation that I received from ARBO, so if anyone wants to get back to me and let me know if they want to attend, I think it'd be a really great experience, and it will count towards your board member training hours that are required, up to 12 hours of training. So I encourage everyone to experience it at least once. I think, you know, ARBO is a quasi-association in the sense that they are not proponents specifically of the profession. They are actually, they function as we do as regulatory boards to protect the public, so it makes it interesting because they work in conjunction with the AOA, but they also have issues with the AOA on occasion because of the different missions that the two associations have. So if you've never experienced the
ARBO. Oh, yeah.
Pardon, Dr. Kasagas?
I said, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Between the AOA and ARBO, yeah.
Yeah, so I encourage you to think about it at least. And like I said, even if you just attended a portion, I do need a voting delegate. And I can be the voter for representing Arizona, but usually it is whoever I bring with me to the ARBO conference. So, again, if everyone will just give it some thought, I would sure appreciate it. But I'll send you the agenda and the information when our meeting is concluded so you can decide and let me know.
Margaret, if I could jump in here real quick. I think it's, going to ARBO is a good exercise as far as seeing what a regulatory body does, and I learned a lot in going. This, a virtual conference, could be a way for you to experience an ARBO meeting without having to travel to wherever. They have it typically 3 days before the AOA meeting starts. So this year you won't have to go anywhere, but so if you can watch a little of it on video, then I think you'd get to see what ARBO does, and who knows, if it sparks an interest, maybe you'll want to go to the meeting next year as the voting delegate with Margaret. So it's just an easy way to get a look at it and see what it's like.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kasagas. Are there any future agenda items? One that I have that I just wanted to mention, it's probably obvious, but it is the executive orders. I will continue to monitor the executive orders and present them as they become available.
I have a question on a future agenda item. Would we have to make a future agenda item the assistant AG looking into what we can do with insurance companies? Would that we have to make that an agenda item, or is that just something she's going to do?
I think we could, I think I could, as the director of the board, make a request as something I'm curious about, because we need to see if something's in our statutes or not, and if we need to make a change. It would become a future agenda item if there was information to report.
Right. Okay.
So at that time, so
that's fine.
Let me do some preliminary research and requesting, and then I will make it a future agenda item after that.
And I have it's not a future agenda item, but it's a question that I forgot to ask when you were talking about item 3 in the COPE extension. Did Arizona not accept COPE's ruling to where we would accept more than the 12 hours during this period if they needed it? Or are we just still only accepting 12 hours?
We are still only accepting 12 hours. The board has not had any discussion on extending the number of hours. I'm not sure how we would do that. I'd have to also do some research, Dr. Kasagas, because it's in rule that it's 12 hours. So, you know, we don't have authority to waive our statutes or rules. So it actually would have to be a directive from the governor's office, either directly.
But even an executive order?
Well, if it's
an executive order,
if it's in an executive order.
What I'm trying to do is head it off at the past before it becomes a future problem, because I was under the impression that I thought we had discussed it where we were accepting COPE, that if you took courses right now during this time, they would be considered live.
Yes, we are following that modification, but I thought you had asked me, are we extending the 12 hours of online?
Okay, no, because, well, in essence, it's kind of the same thing, but not really. I could see your point, too. I guess I'm saying if I report next year with 16 online hours, but 10 of them were during this period. That's still okay. It's still 10 of them were still alive, right?
Correct. Correct.
I'm just using me as an example. Okay. So I just wanted to make sure that we were accepting these current ones as live, but we're really not extending the 12 hours of online. And I know it's just semantics, but okay. I'm just making sure we're saying the same thing.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a delineation. So the way that Ms. Hollins and I are looking at it is because they have made a distinction, you know, COPE has, of courses that they previously had scheduled as in person, like I said, that they've now recorded and presented online as a live webinar. Those are still in-person courses because they originally were. Any courses that were actually approved as, you know, correspondence online, self-instructed media, however you want to say it, those are still just.
Okay.
Does that clarify or make it worse?
Yeah, it does. Okay. Because at the AZOA, at the AZOA meeting, I mentioned to them that we were doing that, but not all states were, so that if not all state boards were going to do that. They said, we don't care what COPE says. It's still 12 hours of online, and everything else has to be live. So,
correct.
I just wanted to make sure we didn't get a boatload of problems when these people come in for renewal. So thank you very much.
We'll change as the need arises, Dr. Chrysagas. I think our board is very on top of it and very reasonable. So, of course, we'll do our job. Future board meeting dates, I do need to inform the board that our board counsel has had a little change of assignment for some of her other commitments besides our board. So now the second Friday of the month is no longer available as a board meeting date, nor is the third Friday of the month. So I would ask the board to right now for the July, well, for the August, I'd say if we're meeting in August, I don't know that we have a need for next month. It's up to the board. If they would like to change the day of the week based on everyone's kind of availability, or if they wanted to pick either the first or the fourth Friday of the month to change our meeting dates currently. So can we all talk amongst
you? Any comments?
So I'm sorry, Margaret, the second and third Friday are not available.
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct.
So the first or fourth?
First or fourth Friday, or board wants to change it to
another
Wednesday, the board can do whatever it wants. We just have to make sure, you know, everyone's availability is there, including Ms. Baskin.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I'd prefer to keep it on Fridays if possible. That's much easier for me.
Okay.
This is Dr. Jones. I would prefer Friday also.
Okay. So okay. First or fourth, Ms. Baskin,
first
do you have a preference?
Either of those is fine with me.
Ms. Baskin, are you there?
Yes, Ms. Whalen and Dr. Chrysagas, members of the board, I am here. I am available either the first or the fourth.
Okay.
Friday.
Okay, what say you?
I mean, let's go the first Friday of the month.
Sounds good.
Everyone's okay with that, Dr. Chrysagas?
Someone specifically wants to go to the fourth.
Yeah, I'm okay with either.
I'm good, too.
Okay, perfect.
So let's go first Friday of the month.
All right, so
and
go ahead, Ms. Baskin.
Oh, I was just going to make a comment that's not legally related, but that may work out better with holidays and, you know, that kind of occur at the end of the month. So.
Okay, so first Friday of the month, so that means that Ms. Hollins and I will change our jurisprudence exam date, but it's not as related as it used to be to the board meeting dates. And so the first Friday of July, of course, is the holiday of the 4th of July. The state offices are closed on the 3rd because the holiday is on a Saturday, so if it pleases the board, I think it would be completely appropriate to meet on August. First Friday in August as our next meeting. That will also give me time to glean and collect all the records and, you know, follow up from the two cases that I had on today's meeting.
Okay. What date is that? I don't have my calendar.
I greatly apologize. August 7th?
This is Mona Baskin. It's the 7th. It's August 7th, yes.
Yeah.
So also regarding future future meeting dates, Mr. President, members of the board. Our mandate is to meet at least 6 times per year. I know we discussed a little bit last month why we were meeting every month. It just really depends on the business of the board. I'd be happy to finish out the year with every other month, I think, you know, depending on the caseload. I do have one complaint that didn't make the cutoff, if you will, for this meeting, so that will be on the August meeting, and then we will have the follow-up complaint for Dr. Packers, or for Dr. Geiler. So, you know, I think we could do August and then probably October and December, or just finish out the year, you know, in November. That's totally fine, too, just as kind of a heads up. It will be up to Dr. Moffitt.
So no June meeting we don't?
No
June meeting we don't think?
No. Well, this is
the June meeting.
No July.
Oh,
July
no kidding. No July meeting.
Surprise,
the year's getting away from me.
Surprise when you're having fun.
So I have Friday, August 7th as our next board meeting date, and then we can, like I said, you know, that's why I always agendize it, so we can talk about it and decide how we want to proceed for the next board meeting after that. And that concludes my director's report, Mr. President.
Thank you very much. It's always a highlight.
Thank you.
Call to the public. Is anyone on the call that would like to make a comment? And I hear none. And I will accept a motion to adjourn.
This is Dr. Jones. I make a motion to adjourn the meeting today.
Do I hear a second?
This is Dr. Moffitt. I second.
Thank you. a motion and a second. I don't think we need any discussion, but I got to do a roll call on this, too. Dr. Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt.
Aye.
Dr. Hunter.
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris.
Aye.
I vote aye. Let the record show the meeting is adjourned at 11:01. If I had a gavel, I would pass it to Dr. Moffitt, but I don't, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks
for your confidence, everybody.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Great meeting.
All right. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Bye.